Gaudete Sunday, so rejoice Sunday. The first three readings, or the first reading, the responsorial psalm, and the reading to the Philippians are all about rejoicing, about gladness. They are about being joyful. At Christmas time, the signs and the symbols that are displayed around the place are nearly always about being joyful, not necessarily rejoicing, that's probably more in the Christian context, but certainly it is about being joyful, being happy. Some people use the word Happy Christmas, some use the word Merry Christmas. The outcome is hopefully the same, that the joy that I experience, I hope you experience, that I hope that you have a joyful, peaceful time. The truth of the matter is, as you would well know, that that's not always the case. Coming into this season, there will be people here tonight who will be more anxious about things that they have to buy. There will be people sitting here tonight who may be more anxious about wondering what it is they're going to get as a gift for Christmas. And what are they going to do with another pair of socks? Christmas causes a lot of anxiety in a lot of people, and the readings at this time are designed in the church's liturgy to help remove that anxiety and to help bring back a sense of peacefulness, joyfulness and happiness. I think that if you're a school teacher, it would be very difficult to maintain that joyfulness, that happiness, that energy, because there is so much that has to be packed into the last part of the year. I think that if you're a parent and you've got very young children at school, I think at the moment you would be more anxious about, do I send my child back to school for this last week, or do I, so that they don't risk getting COVID, knowing that the vaccine for younger people is coming out in January. So there's an anxiety that would naturally be there. There will be people who are wondering about wanting to travel but not wanting to get stuck somewhere. So the joy of being with family is compromised by a possibility. And then Paul says to the Philippians, don't worry. Well, after 2 years of this struggle that we've been in, it's very difficult not to worry. But as Catholic Christians, our course must be set on that which is positive. So at Christmas time, Saint Ignatius of Loyola had a theory, and it's a spiritual theory, and at Christmas time, particularly in the Advent season, I'd leave it with you. So it goes along the lines like this, very simple. I'll put it this way. To measure the quality and the quantity of your happiness, or the happiness in your life, then examine how much gratitude do you exhibit in your life. The amount of gratefulness, the amount of gratitude we exhibit, we generate, we offer, that will be the test of how happy our life is. Some of the Jesuits then go on to say that the happiness meter, that's my language, not there, if you have people who are sad, you look at their life, you will find that there is a lot of ingratitude there. And if I was to find a word that summed up what a member of the Catholic Church is, I could start with love. That's who we are as Christian people. I could. But the problem with that for me is that in 1 John chapter 4, we're told that God first loved us. It says it very clearly. He first loved us. He gave us the gift of love in his Son. So that translates to me with the happiness theory that then To be a Catholic Christian, certainly love is part of the package, but firstly, the one word that could sum up being a Catholic Christian would certainly be gratitude. God first loved us. So that's our starting point. We should be grateful for that. And through the gift of our faith, we can expand on how we live out that gratitude. In the Gospel, today we have John talking, and Luke's writing, of course, and put through the lips of John, the conversation that is had before Jesus' baptism. So John is baptizing people in the River Jordan. Baptized means completely washed, to immerse, to dunk under. It's not a gentle thing, it's quite a physical thing. So, and it was, as I've said before, it was a public demonstration that I want to change my ways. When I come out of this water, I want to be a different person. And John, therefore, has various people, and from Luke's point of view, they would represent society roughly. The first one, he says, is if the person who's got two cloaks, give to the person who has none. In the society in which Jesus was growing up in, you would not give your cloak to a stranger. Anything given away is given within the family. It wouldn't be passed on to other people. It would be kept within the family context because the unit was so tight. So the village of Nazareth, for example, it would be, there might be a cousin who is disadvantaged. That's the person that you would give your cloak to. That's the person that you would give assistance with a meal, we're told. Now, Luke puts that in there because he's the apostle to the Gentiles. So Luke puts that in there and he's saying, you've got to go beyond your family, go beyond Nazareth. You've got to look for those that need feeding and look for those that don't have clothes. And that's where you start to be generous. Go beyond your family, because that's who he's writing to. He's not writing to a small Jewish group. He's writing to the non-Jews. And then we have tax collectors come up. So that's certainly part of the tradition at that time. But there was no legion. There was no Roman legion in Palestine at that time. None at all. So it wasn't a Roman soldier that gets referred to in a minute. The taxes that are collected certainly go to Rome. But the soldier, when he comes up, he says, what do I do to be saved? He is told, don't extort, don't intimidate, and just to take your pay. Those soldiers would have been temple soldiers, young men, who will have harassed and bullied people and blackmailed them to get money, because they had nothing else to do. So they weren't Roman soldiers. The Roman connection really comes through. They say tax collectors, but they are really toll collectors. Any goods that came into Jerusalem and any goods that went out of Jerusalem were taxed, or they had a toll put on them. And then there were specific people, mainly underlings, who collected that toll. And then above the underling of the toll collector was the boss man. He was the one that got the cream of the crop. And so he would then give the toll to the Romans, he would keep his part of it, and the poor little fellow had to do the work. They would up the price of the toll so that they could at least get something. And that's the extortion that he's talked about. And it's interesting that John, he doesn't talk about the system. He doesn't talk about the system of people who have no clothes, what makes people hungry. He doesn't talk about the system of injustice economically, that the criminality of the behaviour of the soldiers. He doesn't talk about any of that. He talks about what we can do if we are caught in that system. And I think for us in Advent, many of us could place ourselves in that position where our unhappiness is created because of the system in which we live in. And that's very difficult to get out of, because we're a very wealthy Western society, we're therefore very competitive, and our focus is more on things like success and image. They don't even get a mention here. The things that get a mention here are the very earthy, very practical things, and they are based on justice, to be honest. And that justice comes through, it's the Old Testament prophets' philosophy, if you like. It is simple justice. If we want happiness, be grateful and exercise justice. And then we will experience joyfulness, we will get our confidence back. We will learn to be gentle people, the opposite to what's mentioned in the gospel, and there comes our peace. But I truly, truly do believe that it starts with gratitude. Be grateful for whatever it is we have. The fact that we can come here freely tonight, the fact that we've got young people and some not so young providing music for us tonight. They can work out who's who. We are in a position where most of us are complaining because we've had too much rain. 2 years ago, we were complaining because we had no rain. Look at the small things in our life and just be grateful. And once we identify those things, we can then start to be generous because I realise that I have more than I need. I can survive happily on very, very little. I think mainly if I've got my health's a starter, I suppose, but if I've got good people in my life that are prepared to share a smile with me and prepared to have a conversation about love of God and then bring that out practically, like the gifts that are given under our tree for St. Vinnie de Paul, there are many, many ways to exercise gratitude. But in Advent time, we use this as an examine, an opportunity to look at our life joyfully and gratefully, thanking God for the gift of his love first given to us, which was so enormous that I cannot help but give it to someone else. It's too much for me, God's love. It's got to be given. And that is the good news. I guess the question for us might well be then, are we truly ready to believe that the good news is, in fact, good?